This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 39, Washing Machine Repairman. Coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we answer your questions about temperament and concentration, we talk about when a leg glance isn't a leg glance, and we look at Rajasthan as setting the example for academies in India. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, a blast of audio cricket coaching goodness straight into your ears every week. I'm David Hinchliffe. I'm in charge of the blast cannon. And alongside me, lighting the fuse, Director of Cricket Coaching for Millfield School, Mark Garraway. How's it going, Garris?
Very well, thank you.
I've been getting my man card stamped this week by having to fit a washing machine.
Not really my forte, that.
Well, me neither. Me neither. So I was impressed that I didn't get completely covered from head to foot in water. So that was step one. So, yeah, it's gone well so far. Berners is also on the line. How's it going, Berners?
I'm good, thank you. I once had to fit a dishwasher and I forgot to turn the water on and then called the technician.
The lost art of man skills between the three of us. We've probably got plenty of stories of not being able to do those kind of things properly. But let's talk about cricket, because that's what we're here to talk about. I saw an article this week about Rajasthan's academy and the things that they're doing there. And Gareth, I know you've done some work in Rajasthan. So what's your view of how things are going at the Cricket Association there?
Well, I think they're doing all right. I mean, the facility is a great facility, and we were lucky enough to be training out there ahead of the 2006, Champions Trophy. Mm. And we had 10 days out there, and the facilities are great. You know, the outdoor net facilities are fantastic. At the time, they were just about to get the gym up together, and it was a good space. And since then, I've been back a couple of times, and they're great facilities. And as a result of having great facilities, that's a help to any young player that's in the state that wants to better their cricket. I think the challenge that they've had is a lack of continuity in their coaching, really, and in particular in their leadership that they've had. And that's probably been the thing that stopped it from becoming a real trailblazer, I suppose. The facilities are there, but if they were able to get some continuity in their leadership, then I think they would be a trailblazer.
And I know they've got plans for having sort of satellite academies as well, so they can really take advantage of areas which are missing out on having opportunities to be spotted, players having opportunities to be spotted.
Yeah, and that's crucial, isn't it? You know, in any state, it's crucial, but particularly one which is so big. And, you know, in India, it's a huge place. There's a lot of states, but they do cover a massive amount of area, and also not always particularly accessible, some of the areas, you know, very easy to get to in a short period of time. So satellite academy approach is absolutely essential, in the same way as it is in Australia, in massive amounts of ground. You know, they've proven to be very, very successful. So that's a good approach that they're taking, and I'm sure that'll bear fruit.
Berners, what's your experiences with Rajasthan?
It's good that they're setting the bar quite high with this style of academy. I've spoken to a lot of the IPL franchises, and they've all got, you know, that element of goodwill and social responsibility to bring something to the cricketing masses in whatever region they are. So having facilities such as these, fantastic. And I was reading the article actually, and it says there's a little bit more to it than just cricket, of course, and plans to go left field with opening people's minds up somewhat more than just the actual bats and balls. So that's really great that, you know, doing it from a kind of pedigree of one of the IPL franchises or associations is got to be good for everyone involved.
Yeah, and academies definitely have an influence on what quality of player comes out of those academies. So if you've got a very high quality academy, then you're going to be seeing that in your top end teams as well, aren't you, Gareth? Is it simple as that?
Well, it is really, but obviously you need to measure some are more effective in delivering cricketers into an environment. But to me, the real acid test isn't that the players that you get through from academy into first class. It's how impactful they are and how many then go on international cricket. And I think, you know, looking back at my time at Somerset with the academy, we were very, very good at getting them from academy through second 11 cricket and into the first 11, but it didn't necessarily mean that they were going to be excellent first class cricketers. And this, I'm taking the same approach here, which is, you know, it's school, which is a sort of mini academy, which is linked to a number of other academies and counties around the country, because obviously we don't just have players from Somerset, we have them from all over the country and all over the world, in fact. But really, our barometer for how we're going is people that play over 100 first class games, that people go on and play international cricket in one of the three formats, because it's really easy to get somebody to play one or two games and not have a particularly sustained impact. But actually, the real good academies are the ones that manage to build the cricketer to be robust enough to deal with the challenges of first class cricket and then up into higher levels as well. So Sir James Hildreth and Josh Butler are very much the type of players that I would like to think that Somerset are going to need to develop, because they're here for a long time. They're going to compete at top levels, and hopefully Josh is going to go on now with Lancashire and play for England. And that's the sort of thing that we should be looking at, rather than just people that play one or two games.
That's a really excellent point you made, Gareth, and it's interesting to think how much influence you could have on that, because you can only, obviously in an academy environment, you can only take a player so far, and then you sort of have to hand them off to the next set of coaches as they move into first class cricket, and you have to sort of give them some momentum, almost like a running start, so they're sprinting when they get into that next level, and so they don't lose momentum. Is that the way that you look at it?
Yeah, it's a really good point that you make. And I think, you know, the starting point in an academy, say if somebody comes in at the age of 13 and goes all the way through and plays, has a good career in Test cricket, in One Day International cricket, in T20 cricket, the probably each player is going to go through around 40 pairs of coaching hands. So one of the challenges that I think we all have as coaches is to make the player robust enough that they can deal with different coaches, different styles, that they understand their game enough and they can pick out the best bits from each of the coaches that they deal with and enhance their own game. But what generally happens is that players become quite coach reliant at a young age, and as a result have difficulties with their coaching relationships as they go up the ladder. Well, 40 pairs of coaching hands are going to have different approaches, they're going to have some similarities as well. So it's important at that young age that we actually make sure that the player becomes robust, has some coaching strategies or some strategies to deal with different coaches' approaches, to be able to challenge coaches and also to be challenged themselves is really, really important, because we don't want anybody to be derailed or held back by their reaction to a new coach. So even in the Test match arena now, you've got Andy Flower leading the England Test team, and then you've got Ashley Giles leading the ODI and the T20. Now, they work brilliantly close together, but they will have different slants and different approaches because they are different people. And then they've got Graham Thorpe doing the batting for the ODIs and the T20s, and Graham Gooch doing the batting for the Test matches. Again, different skill sets, different approaches, different characters. So there's four coaches, and that's in the same team, effectively. So, you know, we need to make sure that people are robust enough, and that early age is about building robust cricketers that will go through 40 pairs of hands, plus maybe even more in the future. So we've got to prepare cricketers like that, rather than, I hate it when I hear, oh, he's my player. That's the worst thing that I ever hear about anybody, and I'll challenge any coach that comes out with that, because that isn't the reality. They might have a real good relationship with you, but the bottom line is, if they're going to have any success whatsoever, they're going to go through a number of coaches. So it's not about them being your player, it's what you can provide that player that gives them the best chance of success as they go forward and into different environments with different coaching groups.
Yeah. And how many people are going to be offering advice who aren't a coach as well?
Exactly right. Some of it will be good advice. Some of it will be great advice. And some of the best advice we get doesn't necessarily come from a coach.
Exactly. You have to learn. You have to learn to be able to filter that and work out what is good advice and what is not so good advice for yourself, don't you? Otherwise, you know, you'll never do the job.
Correct.
Okay, that's enough pre-show chat. We will start the show properly any minute now. But before we do that, we've got our little wrap-up of the yes-no round. Three questions that Berners asks us. And Gareth and I can only say yes or no, no matter how much more that we want to say or how confused we are over what the question actually is, like last week. So, Berners, what are the three questions this week?
First question, the only useful practice is mentally and physically demanding.
No.
No.
Second question, to find fast bowling talent, set up an academy and make it a hotbed.
Yes.
No. Ooh.
Third question, the oldest lessons should always be learned first.
No.
No.
Deep thought from you there, Gareth, this time.
Correct.
Time for us to have another rummage in the mailbag, and there's a couple of questions available. The questions have been sent in, of course, and one of those questions is going to win a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. But both questions are going to get answered. And Berners, just before we get into the first question, if someone was listening and thinking, well, this is all very well listening to other people's problems, but I've got a problem that I want answering, how would they get in touch with the show and get their problem answered?
They can call us. The number here is 020-3239-7543. Or they can email, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
Think of yourself as a washing machine and us as the repairmen. What's the first question this week, Berners?
First question is from Cups, and he was recently reading Shermel's article about H-A-R-D, hard, and he saw that one of the cornerstones was based around mentality, and he's saying that while he agrees with him, he does not know any exercises to improve his temperament and concentration. So he's just asking what sort of things he can do to kind of train his mind.
Now, that is a huge question, and I want to focus on one particular area of that, which is something I talked about recently in an article as well. And by the way, that article that you mentioned, I'll link to that in the show notes if you want to find that. But something I talked about in a recent article, which is part of the mental part of the game, which is commitment and your ability to stick to things and work hard at things. And I think that's the cornerstone of any kind of approach to improving your mental game, improving your mental toughness, if you like, is that you have to build from a foundation of commitment, and you have to work out methods of being able to say to yourself, how am I going to do these things regularly enough to build up the rest of my mental game and my technical game and my physical game and my fitness and those kind of things. But I think it all starts with what is sometimes called grit, which I say commitment is. It's the same kind of thing. It's your ability to stick at things, have a method of sticking at things, which will then build up your confidence. Gareth, I know you talk about the phrase robust confidence, which I like a lot. You can build up your ability to be confident, and that will improve your concentration. And it all starts, I think, with your commitment and your ability to stick at things and work through things. And I think that is increasingly becoming an important part of, well, everything in life, but cricket no more so. So that would be the place to start for me, working out methods to commit to whatever the rest of your plan is.
Well, I'm going to go with concentration because it was mentioned in the question itself. So concentration is a skill, and we need to try and develop a way of dealing with that. So let's take it from a batter's perspective. We talk about the concentration funnel. So we're playing a shot, we've played a shot, we've reviewed it very broadly. So, you know, what's it meant? How many runs has it gone for? Did I make good contact? What would anybody think of it? What's the bowler going to do next? All of that sort of stuff. Then we start to narrow it down into, okay, so what have I learned from that? The ball's coming off a pitch slowly. I have to factor that in. So I'm going to play the ball as late as I possibly can. Maybe something that you would consider. Then all of a sudden you start to narrow it down to the key thing that matters. And that key thing that matters is obviously the ball. And we all watch that slightly differently. So you work out how you need to watch the ball. And you see the bowler come in. And the aim really is that you go from that broad focus that we all have, that sometimes we get too caught up in, and then all of a sudden the ball's upon us and we're playing the shot and we haven't got our focus. So we try to work downwards in a funnel. If you can sort of picture a funnel going from broad down to the key thing that matters, which is you and the ball at that given time. So keeping yourself in the now, then that's the way to go. So use a funnel. There's some great graphics on the internet of a funnel showing the process of going from broad exterior and external into narrow internal focus, which is ultimately you and the ball. If you can get into a process of doing that and get people to watch you in between each ball, and this sometimes is why nets with the five or six bowlers isn't a great thing, because you don't get to practice your pre-delivery routine, which is what this is all about. See how consistent you are in between each ball. And one of the best bits of feedback that I've ever been able to give people visually is that I turn the camera on after they've made contact with the ball. I keep it rolling until the bowler gets into his delivery stride, and then I cut it off. So they get to see the whole of the journey between the end of the last ball to the beginning of the actual execution of the shot. And by doing that, if they see four or five of those on the bounce, they'll see how consistent or inconsistent their pre-delivery routine is. And then obviously they can weigh up the success or failure of the shots that they played after that. And often the most consistent people with their pre-delivery routine, and somebody like Jonathan Trott takes it to the nth degree, but is somebody that's been very successful with it. All of the best guys have their own routine as such, and they follow that, and it gives them the best chance of concentrating on that key point. So that's my first bit. The second bit is going on that confidence, that robust confidence. We all have our strengths, but how many of us tell ourselves what our strengths are? And we talk about affirmation statements. An affirmation statement is something that is factually true that we can place somewhere. And a great example of this is having a little card in your cricket bag, or on, if you've got a cricket coffin like the old days we used to have, then stick it onto the back of the cricket coffin. So every time you open up that cricket coffin, you've got a statement or a series of statements which are telling you facts which are true about yourself. So if you're a great player of a short ball, then the first thing you have, I've got a great pull shot. My stats over the last 3 years have been, you know, I've averaged 45 over the last 3 years. Put things that nobody can argue about. Make them crystal clear and remind yourself on a regular basis by having them in places that only you will find, like the inside of your coffin or on the a little picture with some words on it in your wallet. So every time you open up that wallet, you're confirming to yourself and you're affirming to yourself what you're really good at. And over time, because it's factual, it will drip in and it will build that robust confidence that you talked about earlier.
I think there's definitely a place for affirmations. I agree with you there, Gareth. I think the danger of affirmations, apart from, you know, saying general things which are not particularly helpful, but you said that by, you know, making it as specific as you possibly can and relevant as you possibly can to you. The danger is that you can become blind to them if they are in one place for too long. It's the shopping list on the fridge effect. Whereas you stick a shopping list on the fridge and then you forget that it's there because you go into the fridge and you become blind to the fact that it's there. So what I like to do is as a little trick from that is to randomize it in some way or another. Like for example, here's a technological example where you could randomize it a little bit. You can set up three services available on the internet where you can set up that email you at roughly random periods. It could be every other day, it could be every 6 weeks, whatever you like, at roughly random periods, and you can put an affirmation in there. And then when you check your email on next Tuesday, you see that in there and you think, oh yeah, I forgot about that, and then you get carry on with your day, and then you might not see it for another 4 days, and then it pops up again. So it puts it a little bit more in your face, in ways that are a little bit more random, that you could approach it a little bit random, so you lose that blindness to it. So that's I think maybe that's a bit more of an advanced tip for using an affirmation, but I like the adding a little bit of randomness into it as well.
Yeah, and I think that will work for some people and wouldn't work for others. I think that's the crucial thing. And with everything, you need to experiment with it to see what is effective to you. Because there's been lots of examples of people that have reacted really well to having things in the same place because they like the security of things coming in from the same place. And an example of that would be Ricky Ponting, who ahead of new series or ahead of a big game, would write in his diary the 10 things that are most important to him going into that game the next day, or to that innings the next day. And they would largely be the same things over and over again, and they would all be put into his diary. So it does work for some, but I like the randomness. You've just taught me something there that I didn't know before. And with certain personality types that we get to know as we're working with people on a regular basis, that may be more important than having it in a stable place. So I get that, and that's really good. I've learned that today. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And the point about it always being in the same place as well is that the key to it is that, are you looking at it? If you've got that blindness to it, like you often get blindness to things that are in the same place. It can happen to anybody. If you're not looking at it anymore, then it's not working. So whatever system you need to put in place to make sure that you're looking at that and reminding yourself of that information, then that's when it's going to become effective to you. It's no good having those things written down if you never look at them. You have to be looking at them and making sure that they are a part of your thing. And I think that comes back to my initial point about commitment. You need a system. You need to be committed to a system that works for you, that you can do those things. And whether those things are hitting balls in the nets, or looking at affirmations, or working on your self-talk or your visualization or imagery or whatever other mental approaches that you want to do, you want to make sure that you're doing them consistently over a period of time to test them out, to see if they work. If they don't work, you can discard them. If they do work, you can carry on doing them consistently.
Our next question is from AB, and
I love AB.
He's got a lovely point here. I like this one. He's saying that if there is a leg glance, why is there not an off glance? Do you not think the way we traditionally coach batting as a discrete set of separately named shots is a help or a hindrance when it comes to producing batsmen with a coherent skill set and a flexible game plan? So I think he wants a one-size-fits-all jargon buster for batsmen.
Yeah, I think this is going to... Gareth, I'm going to be fascinated by your answer to this, because this is a question with layers. So ignoring the point about why is there not an off glance, which is you can argue whether there is one or whether there isn't one. But I guess the key point here is that we've got a series of different shots. Is that something which is becoming a bit out of date?
I think it's a brilliant question. And the answer is possibly. But equally, we're adding to that list, aren't we? Every single year, I think we're adding to that list. You know, the reverse sweep, the switch hit, the flip, the reverse flip, the drop kick over mid-wicket. You know, they're not what we would call traditional coaching batting shots. They're ones that we're adding because the formats of a game are developing these shots, and the key players in each game, particularly in 2020, are developing these shots. So whilst I agree that, you know, they could become a hindrance in that things like the leg glance have been there since donkey's years ago, and they've been taught to me when I was a kid, which is donkey's years ago. So I agree they can be a hindrance, but equally we're in an age where we're consistently adding to those descriptions. So we've certainly got more than we had previously, which is good. But yeah, the answer is it could be or it couldn't. But I just love the fact that we're adding to it, because I like things going forward. So, I haven't really answered the question, but I don't think there is a definitive. And I slightly disagree with Bernie saying that, you know, one cap fits all approach. I don't think that's what AB is suggesting at all. I think AB is saying, are we too prescriptive, or could we open it up? And my answer to that is, I think we have been too prescriptive in the past, but because of the way that people are playing and the people are expanding their game, particularly in the shorter impacts of shorter formats, which is now impacting upon the longer formats, we're actually adding to that list anyway. And probably what we'd have considered to be a leg glance 30 years ago, which may have been a tickle down a fine leg, can now actually be a leg glance that goes in front of the square on the leg side. So we're always expanding that. So I'm not answering the question, but I think that we're in a great place at the moment where the game's only being expanded, which can only be, in my view, a good thing.
It is. I'd certainly think that the days of having a diagram in the coaching book which says if you get a half volley, then which is on off stump, then you drive it straight on the offside, etc., etc. I think the days of that kind of, you know, a simple answer to everything is long gone. I think now it's a matter of building in an understanding of what shots work at different times and in different ways, and you have to have some kind of categorization of different shots, because you can hit the ball all into different areas. It's not like a golf swing where you're pretty much going to hit the ball in a straight line all the time. you've got the 360 degrees, so you have to have some kind of definition of what that's going to happen. But you know, in modern batsmen, they talk about hitting the ball into areas, don't they, rather than, you know, playing an off drive or an on drive or a pull shot. That, you know, they more talk about hitting it straight or hitting it through mid wicket. So, you know, I guess we don't even use that language anymore now, really, anyway, do we? I mean, certainly not in the way of the 1950s MCC coaching book way, anyway. It's a I think it's, for most coaches anyway, it's not a relevance anymore if we talk about the names of different shots. Someone told me once, which slightly blew my mind at the time, which is when does a straight drive become an off drive or an on drive? Because it's if you drive it straight and it goes on the offside, surely it's an off drive. If you drive it straight, it goes on the onside, then surely it's an on drive. So is it only hitting the stumps? Is that the only thing that's a straight drive? You can get caught up into the categorizations, forget about the effectiveness, which is you're trying to hit the ball past the fielder for four.
Absolutely. And it goes simply back to Barry Richards, who was an unbelievable player that we never got to see enough of because of the bans that were on South Africa at the time. But fortunately, it happened. Sure, we did get to see a bit of him because he played for them and got a lot of footage. And I was lucky enough to have him as one of my batting consultants in the academy donkeys years ago. We were talking, you know, sort of end of the 1990s. And he always used to talk about the gaps, you know, and the gaps for him weren't just the spaces in between fielders, but also the gaps in the field behind the fielders. Mm-hmm. So he never used to even look at the fielders. He just used to look at areas around the pitch that he hit the ball. Now that's 1999, but actually that's not too far away from where we are now in the way that we listen to international cricketers talk about the game. So yeah, we need to put it in that context. Barry Richards was probably ahead of his time in 99, but we're all catching up to his way of thinking, I suppose, in having a drive as opposed to an offside drive or a leg side drive or whatever the case may be. So I'm with you on that, and I think space and where we're hitting the ball into is becoming more and more important.
It is, you know, and that's the outcome is the most important thing, and then the naming structure, I think, is less important, even less important than it's ever been. So, I think that's covered that one off. But AB will be interested in your thoughts, where you come from this, and anyone else who's listening, where do you think the role of different shots is, and playing different shots and categorization and all that stuff, which you can really geek out about if you are of a mind. You can certainly get in touch with us and let us know what you think. But that's covered off the questions for this week. So thank you, AB. Thank you, Cups. And now let's head to the Pitch Vision newsroom for this week's headlines with Daisy Cutter.
Thank you guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Carter and this is the Pitch Vision News. Pitch Vision is talking with Naples Cricket Association about the new indoor facility in Kathmandu. Head coach and former Sri Lankan test player Pubudu Dasanayake is keen on developing the Nepalese national team and promoting cricket in the region. This week on Pitch Vision Interactive, we turn the spotlight to attacking batsmen. As you would expect from the Nets, there are some aggressive players. Top of the pile is Botham with 142.16. It is clear he's aptly named. Following up are TCA Dravid with 104.13 and Kumar A78 holds up India with 100.49. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's Pitch Vision News for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter and now it's back to the panel.
Thank you, Daisy Cutter, for bringing our listeners up to speed there with Pitch Vision going-ons. It's now over to David, who's going to provide us with our daily dose of soapbox action, our weekly dose even.
I wanted to talk about the way that we use language, as mostly as coaches, I would say, but players is an interesting thing as well. There's been a swing towards simplicity. Talk about simplicity and plain speaking. Go away from this idea of talking in biomechanical terms and, you know, swing profiles and lots of technical terms that people roll their eyes. I don't think the correct answer is with plain speaking or with biomechanical terms. It's being able to use language that best brings across to the player that you're coaching the information that you want to give them. I mean, it might be common sense to say to somebody to watch the ball, but that might mean different things to different people. So you have to be careful about when you tell someone to watch the ball, that maybe that's a fairly safe one, but different people do it in different ways. So sometimes you have to help players learn for themselves and use the language that works best for them rather than traditional old school or biomechanical language. Okay, that is the end of the show for this week. Thank you very much for listening, as always. Before we go, Mark Garraway has one more job to tick off on the to-do list, and that is to pick a winner of this week's competition, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Cup's questions about temperament and concentration, and we had AB's question about when is a leg glance not a leg glance. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
I actually preferred AB's question, but I didn't think I was going to. But it blew my mind a little bit, I have to say, once we started to talk about it a bit more and sort of plan it before we did the show. So AB's going to win it this week because I didn't answer it, which always is a good sign of a good question, I think.
It was a glorious rabbit hole that we went very deep into, which we love, of course, on the podcast. So congratulations, AP. Fantastic work there. Now, Berners, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show and they wanted to submit their question, no matter how complex or difficult, what would they need to do?
They can give us a call. The number is +44 for the UK, 203-239-7543. Or they can drop us an email, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
There are international numbers on the website, and you can call us via Skype. So there's no reason not to get in touch with us via the telephone. However, you can also find us on Twitter at pitchvisionacad. And Facebook as well is a place where we hang out and post videos. Facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy is a fun place to be. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so by heading to iTunes. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us there. Click on the subscribe link, and you'll get us every week straight into your iPod or iPad or iPhone or whatever else you use. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you use something else, then just click on pitchvision.com/academy. Go to the podcast link, and you can use the RSS feed to find us there, so you can put it into whatever podcatching program you like. We're available in every single one. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks, guys.